Blog Talk Radio.
To the truth is out there, voice of the people. This is Joe Golan speaking. I want to introduce you now to our co-host. Yes, we got Scarlett here, world famous Scarlett. Hello, Scarlett.
Good evening. Good evening, Joe. Good evening, Peter. I'm here. I'm ready. Don't tread on me. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I'm a patriot.
Turn over to you, Joe. I would like to introduce to our great guest today. He is a political analyst, political know-all. He's one of the best I know and a good friend of mine. His name is Peter Cracchiola. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on the show tonight. I'm looking forward to providing any questions to the audience here.
Okay, great. That song, the theme from John Adams, is perfect for what's going on today. What is your take of what you're seeing around the country right now?
You know what, I think the interesting thing about what you're seeing with these riots that are happening in places like, you look at Miami right from like last night, and then you look at what happened just now today in Tampa at the University Mall, where people are just like throwing people at each other, burning buildings, and lots of other things that are happening around this not only Florida, but throughout the whole country. I think people are right now just looking like they're so angry because the reason why is because they noticed that this police did something that they thought was completely incorrect. You know what? Personally, if the person did something wrong that shouldn't have happened in the first place, because you know what? Personally, I do think the counterfeit situation has to be handled correctly. I mean, you shouldn't even be giving out money if you're a person like that and you just don't give fake money out for people like that. So I mean, the point of the matter is that did I really think that the approach was perfect on their part? I think it should have been held in a better position, that we shouldn't have put the leg on the purse guy and just say like, oh, that you're going down, all that. I mean, personally, I think he should have basically just handcuffed the guy and just put him in the car and just done. That should have been like the whole strategy to basically arresting this guy that was doing something illegal. And you know, personally, there's still a lot of people that are kind of like mad at it. But the reality is, I think you're just seeing people disappointed because they're worried about more about race instead of about mostly the issues. And you know, personally, I think race to me doesn't. The word would be this: race just doesn't. It doesn't really fit the picture to being what you are. Basically, it's always going to be about what is the best modus to being a person, to be honest, and then basically how you feel is going to be right. So personally, I can tell you right now is that I think people that are mad right now, it's a complete embarrassment to the Democratic Party. And we're seeing this happening everywhere. And you're going to see people that are going to come out to vote for the President of the United States in November, and people are not going to see this type of rhetoric anymore. I think we're going to see the future come to the Republican Party as of November of 2020.
I agree with you on that. That incident, by the way, it had to do with counterfeit ring and some other stuff, but that they were getting. It was, and they called some people over involved in that sting, whatever they were working on. But the takedown might have been over excessive, but we don't know for sure. But the preliminary autopsy on the guy showed that the kneeling on the neck had nothing to do with his death based on the early autopsy. He was under the influence. We don't know if it's alcohol or drugs or both. And he had a heart condition. And they believe that, those two combined with the takedown caused a major heart attack where he died there based on the heart attack, not the kneeling on the throat. He can't breathe was because he was having a heart attack, not because of the kneeling on his throat. That's what they're saying right now. But in reality, also, you got to remember, this is not the first time this one cop got into trouble. He was involved in another incident a while back. And at that time, there was a young lady who's now a senator and a former presidential candidate who was actually the attorney general at the time in Minnesota, who actually did not prosecute this cop for killing somebody else. And because of that, he was able to be where he's at now. That woman that was there was none other than Amy Klobuchar.
Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah. Right. She was deposed the attorney in charge of that case. She refused to indict, and because of that, he was out on the street. Where is the outrage there? The other thing is that if you want to change something, instead of destroying your own property, instead of destroying your neighborhood and stuff like that, be involved in the community. Become a police officer. Run for office. Do something. Step up. Do charity work. Work in the community. By people doing and burning things down, looting the store stuff, it sends the opposite message. And now with President Trump designating Antifa, and I believe he's doing the same thing with Black Lives Matter as terrorist organizations, we're now able to take them down with stiffer penalties. But what's arson is now a life sentence under the Terrorist Act. What, any comment?
Did you read that they are putting bricks out in all the areas so they can throw them? They're stacking them. They're getting ready to go to war.
That's unbelievable. I mean, where did this actually take place at?
They're doing them in all the areas.
I think in New York. I know in New York for sure.
Ready to stone people.
I know in Dallas, they actually ran and looted the store, and they dragged out the owner of the store and beat him to death. And I have that on video, which I posted on Facebook.
All these actions that are going on across the country, I truly deeply believe, have nothing to do with the George Floyd incident. I believe it's just a way to start trouble. Never let something good get by in the Democrat Party.
Yeah, crisis go to waste. Now,
right.
With all that in mind, Peter, we'll start working the races down here. As far as the presidential race, what do you think all this stuff is going to happen? Going to do with race? Will the minds change, or will the race stay the same?
Which particular race? Are you talking about the sheriff's race or legislative
we'll go national first.
Presidential race.
After me for presidential race.
All right, so we're going to talk about the presidential. Okay, interesting. Well, I think what you can see this happening throughout the whole state, if you look at Florida, because we are the most, dynamic state in the whole country. I mean, if you look at every single county you look at that Donald Trump has flipped, he's only flipped about four counties in the last presidential election due to the bad performance of this presidential campaign that Hillary Clinton has ran. And you look at it, and it's like there's a hair over in Pinellas County. There's like two hairs away. There's just two hairs up for Trump in like St. Lucie County. You look at Monroe County being one of the other counties that basically had the pendulum swung towards like Donald Trump. And then now you look at Jefferson County, which is like a leaning Democrat area, which is like the suburb of Tallahassee, because you have Monticello, for example. That was another county, Jefferson County, which actually went for the president. And Jefferson's becoming more Republican, because the interesting thing is, you look at all the Democrats that were previously liberals are mostly like, let's say, center of the left or pretty much more moderate Democrats, like Blue Dogs, as they kind of name it. Those people that live up in that area of Monticello, they're starting to kind of change their taste right now, and they're saying, oh, is that this is not the same Democratic Party I was represented. I'm switching parties. I'm one of these older Democrats, and I'm saying, yeah, I'm going to be going with Donald Trump because he's definitely making a lot of changes that have basically kind of like excited my taste of politics, basically. So, I mean, that's I think you're going to see a lot of these people that are excited about this guy again being reelected in 2020. And what I think is going to happen is that you're going to see Jefferson County being for Trump again this cycle. You're going to see Monroe and basically picking Trump for this cycle. Even St. Lucie could also play interesting effect because if you look at what's happening there, we've got a Democratic state house race. I mean, Democratic state house seat that could be a possibility of flipping in this presidential election. Take a look at State House District 84, which is the Fort Pierce district, previously represented by Larry Lee Jr. from 2012 to 2018. He represented a district that carries like parts of some of the areas that are more African American. And you look at those areas, and it's like, look, he's only won this district by over 4% in the first round against Michelle Miller, and in 2012. And then you look at the next other round, he did better. Like he got a lot more bigger numbers, I believe, towards like 2014. And then it's like look at the district being more 4%. I mean, this is how the energy is going to happen. How this is going to be a very close race for St. Lucie County. If Donald Trump gets enough numbers in St. Lucie County, then you're going to see Dana Tribolsi. I know her, and I've spoken to her a couple weeks ago, and I felt like she is the right choice that the district would need to represent in the Florida legislature, and we have a good shot, I think, of defeating Dolores Johnson out of the Florida House and retiring her. This district was only won by Democrats by 4%, and this should be a seat that we really got to look at here that I think could actually be a swing for the area. Pinellas County, and since I'm going to go to the next county, I'm going to go to Pinellas County, which only won by 1% for Trump. If you look at that area, it's like most of the people in the North County side are more like Greek Orthodox people and Greek descendants, actually. And most of those people up in that area are very pretty conservative people. And this is the representative that represents U.S. representative who represents me, which is Congressman Gus Bilirakis, and his father used to be, and Michael Bilirakis used to represent this district since the 80s till 2006 until he decided to retire, and his son took over his spot for the United States Congress. And then you look at more to the south end, it's like you look at South County, which has got more of the Democratic pockets, and then you got plenty of moderate Republicans that represent the party down that way. It's like there's just a lot more of those people that just don't tend to vote for the party, and they just vote more for the person. And that's just how you look at Pinellas being a swing county, basically. But I think the problem is that you look at South County, it's got a lot more population than North County, I believe, because you got St. Pete, which is the largest city in Pinellas County.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a lot of Joe Biden supporters that are going to support him over Trump this time around. If Pinellas voters don't like the way they don't want to see Trump get another term, then I think it's a very huge possibility that Biden could likely take Pinellas County just based on the support he's got in Pinellas. He's got a lot of strong support with the Democrats that he's represented. Even in Hillsborough County, he's got the same thing too, because the Hillsborough REC just hasn't done any good work. I mean, they haven't even got any work done for the last 4 years now since they've lost every single local race in 2016. And then you look at every other single race that was lost in 2018 due to the last midterm election. What we just saw is that the county commission just flipped to become Democrat of a majority. We saw the state Senate become a Democrat, which is basically Janet Cruz over Dana Young. And then we look at Sean Hurston, who just lost to Prentice Driscoll in the north side of Hillsborough. And then we saw an upset, basically, with Adam Hattersley, who just upset Joseph Wickers in the Florida House. So, I mean, if you look at this Tampa-like dynamics of how these are going to play out, I still think right now at this point, I think Pinellas will be pretty much, I think, set for Biden. But I do think our best chances are is we can still win St. Lucie. We can definitely still win Monroe and Jefferson. We're going to hope that we will definitely still not take anything for granted if we look at Duval County and Seminole County, because these are the only two counties that basically turned out for Andrew Gillum because of the African-American vote. I think it'll come back to being for Donald Trump, because the reason why is this. Donald Trump has only won Duval County by only 1% of the vote. I mean, it's a leaning Republican county, but the demographics have really changed a lot during the years. Plus, their REC there has done a very good job on trying to organize a lot of candidates. They've done a really good job on the off-year cycle with the municipal elections, with Mayor Lenny Curry, with Commissioner Terrence Freeman, and also the freshman commissioner, Randy DeFore, and a lot of other people that have got elected in Duval County have done a very good job on trying to represent the party well. So I would expect Duval being supportive of the president 100%. There's a lot of military-based people out there, and most of those people will definitely go with the president 100%. It's just this is the time where people are going to vote for him again, and I think the state will probably vote for him by 2% of the vote. That's how I think the strategy is going to play out, is that Pinellas will basically stick with Biden. St. Lucie could be a possibility of going for Trump again this time. Monroe and Jefferson County will be the same way. So, and that's how I would put this out, saying that I think it's going to be hair by only 2 points. That's how I can say Trump is going to take Florida. So he'll win.
Okay. Peter, we got a caller that's calling in now. I'm going to touch into the call to see what his question is. Caller 305, who are you and what's the question?
Hi, it's Mike Esten. Hi, Peter. Hi, Scarlett. Hi, Joe. The question, I have two quick questions for Peter. Peter,
hey there, Mike.
You just predicted, hey, Peter, if Trump wins Florida, which you just predicted, and he wins Ohio, just those two states, with the division in the country, would that be enough to put him in for a re-election?
Well, that's a good question that you added into, Mike. I believe there's more states that we really have to really look into. It's like Michigan, I understand that this is a state that has also went for Donald Trump by 1%, but if the Republicans can get it right, we can win it. And also, if we look at Wisconsin being one other state that went for the president the last time, I think we could win Wisconsin. And Pennsylvania is like one of the only places I could tell you right now that will probably be a little tougher, just because this is the birthplace of Joe Biden, and he's from Scranton, Pennsylvania, which could play an effect for his state. But if we want to target states that we won the last cycle, we got to really see if we could win Wisconsin. But we really have to try to figure out if we can still win Michigan, because Michigan is going to also be critical in this election too. So what you said, Mike, was definitely correct. An interesting question you added, but like I said, the presidential election is just not even over yet. So we still got more states to cover, and we have to take everyone by a hair and see if we can be able to see this become more of another victory, like we saw in 2016, for example. So, and I appreciate your question today, Mike.
And one other quick one,
believe.
If I need to. Sorry, go ahead.
I do believe something. I do believe that the debate between President Trump and Joe Biden will be an interesting. And I believe that's
sure
what you will see
will
Trump take.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, Trump will annihilate him. Peter, if we win back the presidency, you know the Supreme Court is really going to – do you think the Supreme Court will lean so conservative that many things will go in our favor, including – the overturning of Roe versus Wade?
Well, the thing is that if Ruth Bader Ginsburg starts to retire, we don't know when it's going to happen, but if she were to retire, then we have a possibility of the president basically putting in somebody that will support our conservative ideals, like we want to be against Roe versus Wade, or we want to be against, like, let's say the LGBT issues, just like John Robert, like, because basically when Obama was president, we all kind of remembered here that was this. John Roberts was like one of the only guys who basically made the pendulum swing towards his favor, which basically put the left's favor for LGBT community, LGBT support. So that kind of shows you how why I think we have a good shot of being a conservative Supreme Court justice if we see Ruth being retired, Ruth deciding to retire whenever she wants to be. Done with basically politics. That's where I think we're going to see some changes happen. Is one could make the difference for this seat.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Bye bye now. Now with that in mind, I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to die as a justice. I don't think she's going to make a move. She'll probably die in there because of Trump. What do you think, Peter?
I would have to agree 100% because there are plenty of times where people are like saying, like, oh, is this person going to decide to retire whenever it's the right timing? It's like people just like to be in the deathbed, and that's how politics tends to work. I mean, look at plenty of names of, like, Republicans or Democrat politicians. I mean, you look at John McCain, for example. He was the type of guy, for example, that was in the deathbed for the Republicans because he was in there for a long time. He was a congressman from Arizona. He became the senator of the state since 1987, I believe, actually. 1987 was when he was in office at the time. And he was there for, like, basically over, I would say, like, over, like, 30 years. About like 30 years he's been in office, and then all of a sudden the brain tumor starts to happen, and now it's like he just passed away like 2 years ago in August, like basically late August of 2018, and that just kind of goes to show you how people like to keep their they like to keep their power in politics. I mean, that's not what everybody kind of thinks. I mean, John McCain feels that way, Nancy Pelosi feels that same way too, because she wants to be as much as possible in her own seat. I mean, every single member of the every single member established in wherever you belong, it's going to stay that long, forever. Even your congressman. Don't even forget Elsie Hastings, who is currently right now in a pancreatic cancer situation. I mean, look at him, for example. He's about to head in the same direction that we're seeing in every other elected official, which kind of shows you how that's how the power works in every politician.
That's why we need term limits. You know,
right.
If we had term limits,
I don't disagree at all. I mean, that helps bring prosperity to America.
The other thing is, now we did the president pretty much. According to the polling that came out today, Trump is leading by 6 to 8 points in every state that he carried back in 2016. Biden is winning by similar margins for every state that Hillary has carried in 2016. Neither one changes states at all based on the current map, based on that server, that polling. I don't trust polling, but I, you know, we'll see where it goes. What do you think?
May I interject?
Go ahead.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. My point before was there's going to be a debate. Joe Biden has Alzheimer's or dementia, and Joe's coming up against Trump. Now, the mainstream media keeps him safe, but it ain't going to happen at this debate. And everybody's going to see that Sleepy Joe is without brain. That will change the election. What do you think, Peter?
Well, I think this is what you're going to see happening. Like right after, let's say we finish our Florida primary by August 18th for the congressional and the Senate. And, well, there's no Senate race this year, but in the congressional and the legislative and local races, after we kind of get done with that part of the faith, and then after we get done with also watching the RNC, well, first the Democrats are going to have the Democratic convention in Milwaukee, and then we're going to see.
No, they're not.
The,
they're doing a virtual convention.
Oh, they're going to. Oh, interesting. So they're going to do a virtual convention then. That's interesting. Wow.
I
at least
know.
That's as of right now. But Trump wants a real convention, so.
Well,
yes.
You know, Trump is playing the cards right on having a convention, basically, because it's like the virtual. Let me tell you, for Joe Biden to even accept a virtual convention doesn't really make sense. It's just a waste of time for the voters, and that shows that just shows the poor quality campaign that Joe Biden has represented, and it shows you how well Trump can basically give him like a basically more of a given some roughness to the whole subject. If you look at what would happen right now between now and like let's say September is when we're going to have the debate. Trump is going to spit him out. I mean, look at Joe Biden. What are some things that he's ever accomplished at every level when he was Senator of Delaware and when he was Newcastle commissioner, like basically Newcastle commissioner of from Delaware. I mean, there's just not one thing that you've seen from the guy, or even Vice President of the United States, not to forget him under Obama.
The question is, will he remember?
You look at that example, and it's like, he's when you talk to him, basically, you hear him, like, you see like a student or somebody talking to the guy, it's like, what is he saying that he's coming from his mouth? And it's like, he doesn't say something that doesn't sound correct, and it just doesn't make sense. It's like, if I was like 78 years old right now running for president, it's like, forget it. I don't think I could get any stuff done, basically. I don't think I could ever achieve anything at this type of age. I just prefer retirement. That's the way I feel if I was going to run for office. I would prefer just like let somebody else run because I'm just kind of done with federal policies, for example. So,
you know,
I think
his wife
is
a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Why is she allowing this?
Well, it's always about the Democratic establishment. They always want to tell whoever the president, whoever the advisors tell the presidential candidate to do, and they want, that just kind of just shows poor judgment for the Democratic Party. Even the Florida Democratic Party is in the same direction that we're seeing right now. With if you look at that video based out of like Tampa, Florida, you look at that Tampa virtual rally for Joe Biden, where Chairwoman Terry Rizzo was speaking. And you saw Gina Cruz speaking, and you saw Congresswoman Kathy Castor, who is not far from my district in Tampa, even though I live in Bill Arrakis' district, and you look at Congressman Charlie Crist's district. It was a complete failed project. They were all choppy videos. You couldn't even hear every single detail of everybody about their promoting.
It failed. It had nobody there.
It was a complete failure.
Nobody watched it.
It
was horrible. We have more people in the forum. We have more people at the forum that I did than they did on their thing. It's crazy. But, you know, what they're counting on, whoever the VP pick is what they're counting on. But right now,
it's going to be Hillary.
I think it's right now. I think it probably may go towards either probably Harris or Kamala Harris or one of these African-American females that Biden is looking for. They'll let go with whoever the African Americans want. That's probably what the favorite wants.
Kamala Harris has a lot of luggage that could work down straight, including sleeping with the mayor of San Francisco to become Attorney General. You know, things of that nature. But you know, it's all they have to do is to bring in Tulsi Gabbard, and that'll be the end of her.
Yeah,
so.
But I know Tulsi Gabbard has ran for president already, and she didn't even get near nowhere. But some people liked her because she was better than the other candidates. But the reality is that I don't even think she's going to be near, basically near as like being close to being the running mate with Joe Biden.
I'm not as a running mate. I think Trump will bring her on to go after Kamala Harris just as a person working for, because Trump and Tulsi are actually pretty good friends.
Yeah. That's what I've heard too, which is kind of interesting. And you definitely point that out correctly. It's like, can you imagine like this presidential election were to be over and we're going to see like Tulsi basically like getting a position with Trump? That would totally give the Democratic Party a lot of trouble on this one right there. And that's why so many people are leaving it from there, because look at how disorganized the party's been. I mean, as I said before, from the virtual rally that they've been doing.
Yeah. You look at that,
it's a complete like disaster right now. I mean, how would you expect your party to even represent a virtual rally? It's a waste of time. Nobody listens to it, and it's like if that comes to right now in November, and you see that becoming more of like, let's say, it's more of like a easily a walk-in for Trump. I think if they keep doing more virtual rallies, that gives Trump a triple A plus to even get into the White House, because he's going to get more percent. I mean, nobody's going to even care about the virtual rallies because they're completely like not in place.
There's supposed to be Trump rallies coming in July and August, and I'm telling you, the interest for rallies is we could sell 100, we could give out 100,000 tickets in a matter of hours. People are eager to when we're starting the rallies again, especially now that these got these protests and everything else, and nobody's caring about social distancing or masks. So, you know,
nobody hears about it, too.
You know, they're looking at these people. There are hundreds, in some cases, maybe thousands of people protesting, riding in the streets. And where's the social distancing? Where's the mask for the most part, other than Antifa? You know, and they always mask. So the point is the commentators are not even mentioning it. Yeah. But anyway, let's continue because we still got which individual states, are we going to flip any Senate seats? Do you see anything?
Well, that's definitely great to ask, Joe. I do have a couple of Senate races that I do think are going to be very critical towards this election. We've got here Alabama being our number one U.S. Senate race that is going to be a flip for the Republican Party. Here's the interesting thing: what could happen right now is that right now Jeff Sessions is getting his feet in the fire right now, because you look at what's happening towards his tweet against the president. It just shows that he's running a very poorly run campaign. I mean, Jeff is a nice guy. I have nothing against him as a person, but I just think for his political like ideas to like go against the president, it's just not the right behavior in his part to run in this campaign. If you look at Tommy Tuberville and look at the way he's ran his campaign, he knows how to get the boots on the ground right there. He's a likable guy. He's an Auburn coach, football coach. And he also used to coach over in Miami, basically. I mean, this is a guy.
Yeah, he is all known down here.
He's got a huge following. I mean, everybody knows him from Miami. Everybody knows him from like one place to the other. I mean, he's a pretty impressive candidate. I mean, I think he's going to easily walk all over Jeff at the end of the day. His polling numbers are strong, and it just shows you that the Republicans have somebody that they know can beat Doug Jones, and this is definitely going to be Tommy. He's going to easily give Doug an unemployment for the United States Senate right there. If you look at that, if you look at the state, it always tends to go Republican. 2017 just was a very bad year, just based on like so much elections being rigged over the Roy Moore election and the party not supporting the guy. That failed our chances to keep the Senate seat. But this time around, we've got a very huge possibility of getting this back with Tommy Tuberville, because he's going to definitely run a pretty decent campaign against Doug, and he knows how to.
And he already has Trump support.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the Trump support. That gives him a huge edge too.
And how about Michigan?
You know what, I think this is interesting about Michigan is that I think you have to win Kent County in order to win the United States Senate race. This is very important because the only last Republican who's ever represented the seat was before it was Debbie Stabenow, you look at Spencer Abrams. He used to be the United States Senator of Michigan, and after he lost against Debbie Stabenow in the Senate race in 2000, he got a position under George Bush for being the Secretary of Energy. And you look at Spencer Abrams, like, he was the last existing, the last previous Republican who has ever won this seat since, like, right around the 1990s. And it's like, Republicans haven't even won that seat in a long time. And it's like, could this be the possibility to win it? Look, it has to be about turnout, and you have to look at the numbers in, like, West Michigan, and you have to look at some of the same numbers that Trump performed very well at. And that just goes to show you that you could have potentials there, that if you're going to win Kent County, which is Grand Rapids, and if you're going to win Macomb County, you're going to win these same exact areas that Trump performed better, performed over Hillary Clinton than the last time when Obama won, for example. You look at those areas. Those are the areas that probably say, "Oh, Donald Trump is basically done our job for America. We'll just vote for him again. We'll just vote the same ticket as John James." So, I mean, that could play a pretty good effect in this presidential election. I mean, this is just going to be about. I believe this is going to be really more about turnout than what the numbers look like in Michigan. So, if Michigan can pull out a decent win and, like, have a strong organization of the party, then they can win it. And that's how I think it's going to be used. It's just going to be about the turnout situation.
Any other Senate seats possibility?
Yes, there are two incumbent seats we have in the United States Senate right now that are actually three that are in play right now in the toss-up section that we have to reelect. If you look at Arizona, we have Martha McSally, who's in a very tough race against Mark Kelly, who is the astronaut and the husband of Gabby Giffords. That race is going to be very tough because of the demographic changes, but I'm definitely am hoping that we can see Martha McSally be reelected in the Senate. And then we got to look at Maine being another possibility of keeping. And we've got Susan Collins, who has been in politics for a very long time, but she's done. Let me tell you, this is since we've all heard about the Brett Kavanaugh situation and some of the other voting records that's happened. There's just been a lot of very impressive moves that she's been doing, just to kind of like change the tone of her politics to be on the conservative level, which kind of, I think, makes a lot of people impressed about Susan Collins, why she's a very effective senator, and she's a great senator for to even think like that. I think this is a seat that we have to look at right now that shows that Sarah Gideon is beatable. I don't think it's going to be told by what the polls are telling you that Sarah's going to win and all that is going to happen because we're going to have President Biden. To me, I think you're going to see Susan win it, because there's been a lot of finance laws that Sarah Gideon did illegally, which I think kind of goes to show you how much of a typical Democrat she is. I mean, look at the record. It doesn't fit her position to be in the United States Senate. I mean, Sarah Gideon is a very beatable Democrat, and it doesn't show you how it does show you how flawed she is, and why she can't win on that level. And then we got Tom Tillis, who's up for re-election for the United States Senate in North Carolina. They're putting him into the toss-up category too. But with Trump winning the state of North Carolina, like, we got to win the governor's seat and flip it against Roy Cooper. They're showing polls right now. They're showing Republicans are trailing by over 14 points against Roy Cooper, because he's still leading. So, if we can look at that number here and it shows you that this is going to shrink and we're going to see more people start to turn out, I still think there is huge possibilities that it's going to start to change when it gets closer to November, because everybody hasn't decided yet. And like I said, people just have to go out and vote for Dan Forrest as their new governor and reelect Tom Tillis as United States Senator again, I mean, for another 6 years. So, I mean, that's how the process is going to work. And one seat that we could see possibility that I think we could lose, unfortunately, I think it's going to be Colorado. This is going to be one of those seats that John Hickenlooper will have a job easily in the United States Senate. name recognition, the mayor of Denver, and previous two-term governor, basically. So I think the problem is, what you can see with that Santa Teresa is that Hickenlooper is a very popular Democrat for the state of Colorado, and people know him very well. And that could hurt Cory Gardner's base right there and could hurt the whole state, since it's a pretty Democratic state. I mean, even the governor there is the first openly gay governor, Zeropoulos, and he was the congressman of Boulder. So that kind of goes to show you how much Republicans do unsuccessfully there, because it's pretty much of a Democrat state. But Cory Gardner won it because the first race in the Senate, because this is the year that this is a Republican year where people were disappointed about another term of the President Obama, and this is why people want to change to make it a Republican majority in the Senate, for example, that year when we flipped it. So since 14. So you know what? These are the Senate seats we got to win. We also got to reelect Joni Ernst, because she's up again this year. We have to put a good replacement in Johnny Isaacson's seat and get Collins elected, because I do think he's going to support our rights. And then you look at David Perdue. He's got a very good possibility of getting reelected too, against John Ossoff. And I also do think we're going to see some pretty good chances that we're also going to win. We're also going to win Kentucky, and we're going to beat Amy McGrath in the general election. So that kind of explains how the Senate race is going to start to pull out. But I think in the end of the day, you're going to see it go towards a majority for the Republicans in the Senate. So that's where I put it out.
So, okay,
do you think
next
we're
question.
Gain seats, or we're going to stay the same?
I believe we're going to probably lose one seat, and we're probably going to lose probably one seat or two. And then we're going to still have the majority. So I doubt it's going to be a 50-50 where the vice president has to take over the Senate.
Okay.
So I doubt it's going to happen.
Do you think that we're going to take the House back?
That's the next question.
Well, that's a very interesting question, as you mentioned. If the Republicans can get it right, as I said before, yes, they need to win it. But you just got to look at congressional seats that are going to be winnable. I mean, you look at the state of Florida, every single one that I've read so far has shown that we are seeing every solid Republican and Democrat seat in the state, from District 1 to District 27. Then we look at Georgia being one of our races coming up. I mean, you look at District 6 and District 7. These are going to be toss-up seats. Look at Karen Handel. Because she's going to be the Republican nominee to face Lucy McBath, and she lost re-election the last time to Lucy because of the Democratic wave that, as they said, they always call it the blue wave. But if you look at District 7, then this is a seat that Republicans have kept by only 417 votes, which is Rob Little's seat, and now Rob is going to retire, and now you're going to see if the voters are going to decide on June 9th, are they going to vote for Lynn Homerick in the runoff, Renee Unterman, or are they going to pick Rich McCormick? It could go between either one of the three candidates, even including Mark Gonzalez, who was on the program with Mike Edson, for example. I mean, because he's also running in the race too, for example. So I think right now at this point, the way I think it's going to look right now for Georgia's 7th district, I think you're going to see the race go between – I think it's going to go between two women. I think you're going to see probably Renee Unterman being the establishment favorite for the Republicans because she's the state senator of Buford. And I think you're also going to see Lynn Homerick being the outsider choice, I think, for the Republicans to go against, because I think you're going to have two women that are going to start to, like, give it a pretty good fight. So, and plus Lindsay, she's a biochemist and vice president of human resources at Home Depot. So she does have a lot of credentials, and she's a very strong candidate. So I expect her to probably be one of the two top choices in the runoff. But if Renee Unterman doesn't do successful, then it could go to either Lynn and Rich McCormick for the runoff in July. So you got to look at these districts that are going to be more important for the whole national level. Like I said, Karen Handel versus Lucy McBath is going to be the general election. Whoever the Republican nominee, this is going to be a pickup seat for District 6 over in North Atlanta. And then you've got East Atlanta, which is the seat that we have to keep for for Republicans against Carolyn Bordrow. District's won in South Carolina. We got Nancy Mace. She's one of those high-profile candidates in South Carolina that will be the nominee against Joe Cunningham. That's a flippable Republican seat that should go Republican. And then also we've got New Mexico's 2nd Congressional District, which that's coming up on Tuesday. We've got Yvette Harrell, who is going to most likely be the party's nominee to go against Xochitl Torres Small. You look at that race, it's a 50-50 district. Previously represented by Congressman Steve Pierce, who has been in the U.S. House for quite a while, basically he's been there for six to eight years, ran for Senate, lost, and then he returns back to the House since 2010, and then he serves for about another 8 years, and then basically goes straight to the governor's race.
Overall, because we're running out of time, do you think we're going to flip the House?
Well, at this point right now, no, but if we did have solid candidates that are going to win flippable districts, then that would be a yes. So that's where I kind of see the picture right there.
Okay, sure. Before, because we got like 14 minutes left, so I want to get down to here, to local races here in South Florida, before we end the show, and that is, what do you think is going to, who's going to, do you think Laura Loomer's got a chance in 21?
Which, are you talking about,
21.
District?
Yeah, down here, 21.
Actually, that's Lois, yeah, I meant to say Lois Frankel, I'm sorry about that. Lois Frankel, which candidate are you talking about?
Laura Loomer, because I figured she's going to win the primary.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? It seems like she's going to get the primary because she seems to be the current favorite right now as the Republican nominee. She's got a lot of, following through Facebook, Twitter, campaign, basically Instagram. Anywhere you can, look up her, it's she definitely is everywhere on the radar for District 21. So, I mean, that kind of goes to show you that she may be the candidate that they're going to probably promote in the party, but at the end of the day of this election for District 21, this district will remain to be, I believe, a Democratic seat because Lois Frankel has held that seat since 2012 to replace Alan West, and that this seat has become more Democrat since redistricting. So, and they destroyed the district since 2016. So I expect
and 22. Who is it? Jesse Melton, or I believe she won the primary there.
I'm not 100% sure on that one. I mean, whoever the Republican nominee is going to be for District 22, I do believe that Ted Deutsch will most likely be reelected just due to the numbers that are in the district right now.
How about 23 with Carla Spalding against Debbie?
I think that race will probably go to Carla, and then Debbie would most likely win by over 60% of the vote in the district. So it's another district that an R cannot win based on the numbers.
How about Musselwhite versus Saucy Hastings?
Well, this is interesting. There's a guy who's running in that race in the primary right now that shows, I don't know, he's based out of Miami or somewhere, but it looks like Greg is going to be the nominee since he's already collected his petitions and he got them done. And then you've got him versus Elsie. The way it's looking right now, we're going to see this district go easily Democrat by over 80% of the votes. So I would expect Congressman Hastings to be reelected.
Yep.
Okay, now the question of the day. What do you think is going to happen on the Democrat side for sheriff?
Democratic side for sure. That's an interesting one. Well, I think right now at the end of the day, if more people are right now disappointed in the way that Sheriff Israel has done bad as sheriff in the previous past before they replaced it with Gregory Tony, and if the Democrats really like what Gregory Tony has done to make Broward a safe place, and they've done so well, I think you're going to probably maybe see Gregory Tony being the Democrats' Democrats' nominee for sheriff. Because I think Israel.
My personal opinion, based on what I'm seeing from everything, because I'm in that race now, the Democrats are on the Republican side. I think Al Pollack is moving up pretty fast. I think there's questions on ethics on both Tony and Israel because they both lied on the applications that got caught. Besides what's going on with Tony and Philly, plus what happened with Scott Israel with the Promise Program, which he doubled down on, and other stuff, of course, Stoneman Douglas. What do you think about me and Clark?
Your race, you know, that race is just going to be about turnout because nobody really have ever heard of like Republicans that are including you, for example. So I think this is going to be based on who the Republicans will vote by name, whoever gets the most attention or the most flyers out, I think will vote for that particular candidate. So it'll
I'll give you a little breaking news on that. I did a live feed. You know, I do live feeds now, besides the other stuff that's going on, the forums and all that. And today, Wayne Clark loved my and complimented on my live feed. So that's a good thing there. So we're kind of, I think he's kind of indirectly and directly endorsing me, not officially doing it.
So who's endorsing
me? I think Wayne Clark has officially endorsed me by him loving actually my live feed this afternoon, along with making it go get him type of comment that he did.
Well, congratulations on receiving that endorsement.
But the thing is, it's going to be tight, and you're right, this is a Democratic county, and it's a long uphill battle. Any closing remarks, because we got a few minutes left before we end the show, and I'd like you to give us your final expert opinion.
All right, yeah, I'll be happy to do that. So basically, politics is definitely an interesting game, and there's always a lot coming around right now. We're seeing a presidential election that is going to be very serious, and the people in this state of Florida, even the whole country, need to get out and vote for Donald Trump in this presidential race. And we also, in the state of Florida, we have to keep the legislature Republican. If you want to see races in Broward that are going to be critically important, we need to elect Tom Fabricio as our next state representative for District 103, and we also have to have Chip LaMarca reelected in House 93 over on the east side of Broward County, because Chip is a good buddy of mine, and I am working hard to get him reelected and doing whatever I can to help him be reelected.
Chip,
yes.
Yeah, Chip is a very good guy. He's actually the only Republican in the office here in Broward.
That is correct. I mean, he's got the most name ID on the east side of Broward. He's from White House Point. He's been in the community for a very long time, and he's got a candidate right now that is a local attorney based out of I believe Lauderdale by the Sea. Her name is Linda Thompson Gonzalez. I've read her her finance record and everything else, and it shows that Ford Florida, which is the PAC that was represented by Andrew Gillum before Gillum got in trouble with this whole investigation towards the mess that happened in Miami Beach, for example, she's got that fund from Andrew Gillum. So, I mean, to look at that fund that came from a very progressive Democrat from Tallahassee, it just kind of goes to show you that we can't represent these people in the state of Florida like this. We need to represent more Republicans, like I said, Tom Fabricio, or Chip LaMarca, or even we got also in Palm Beach County, look at Mike Caruso. He's another example that we have to reelect for sure, because it's not only he attends a lot of the Trump clubs and he's got a very serious battle against Jim Bonifiglio, but this is another race that is going to play a 50-50 role again. And he's only won this state seat by only 32 votes. So, I mean, 32 votes made the difference to keep that seat. And we're hoping it's a bigger turnout this time for Mike. So
it will be.
So to tell you the truth, if we all Republicans can win and fight against the Democratic establishment in 2020, then I think we've got a pretty good shot of getting Trump to win Florida. Also, we also have a very good shot of picking up a couple House seats from, like I said, House 103, which is Tom Fabricio. We got House 30, which is Bob Cortez. We've got House 72, if it's either Donna Barcum or Fiona McFarland, for example, either one will be the next House representative in the in the State House in District 72, which is the Sarasota area, to replace Margaret Good. That's a flippable seat right there. And then House 59, whoever wins the race between Danny Kushner and Michael Owen, we're hoping either one will basically have a shot of flipping the seat over in Hillsborough County in the Brandon area. So
okay.
We look at these seats that are very critical. We have to win it. And this is why we have to turn out the vote for the state.
That's
if
right.
If we do it from every single level, we can win it. So that's my theory of tonight's speech.
Thank you so much, Peter. Thank you so much. You did great. You're great. And we actually have a full chat room in the room. I'd like to thank you so much for coming on the show. And it's very informative. And everyone, listen to Peter. We must get out there and vote. We must.
Peter, you'll come
people.
Back to us in the fall after
I
the
appreciate
primary.
It. Well, if there's any other elections coming up that we can discuss about, we may talk about the Florida races before August 18th. So there's a lot of time between now and then. So
we'll get you on before the 18th.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, I appreciate you having him on the show, and let's win this for our party and our for nation. So have a good evening.
Thank
everyone.
You. You too. Thank you
too.
So much.
Bye, Peter.
Before we go, because we're down to 4 minutes, actually less than that. I want to thank Peter. I want to thank Mike Essen, who called in. I'd like to thank Scarlett, my co-host. And I also like to thank S.O. Chrisom in this chat room and Care Africa in the chat room besides my guests and others. Thank you for coming on the show. It was very informative. Remember, register to vote so you can come and register and vote for our candidates. Vote Republican Remember, stay safe out there because these are thugs. These are not regular citizens. These are criminals that are out there. I want to thank you. God bless you all. Come with Wednesday's show. We're going to have a guest. I can't give you the name right now, but she is a former Fox News and former CNN commentator. Stay tuned.
Just my children and
the
riding
is what Lauderdale.
Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. Cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away.
Now you're fine.
And I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the man. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American, where at least men who died, who gave that life to me, and I gladly stand 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the U.S.A.
I'm figuring out the plan.